Hi, everyone. Welcome to Meet the Rockadopolis. I'm Yislike Rockadopolis.
And I'm Lance Rockadopolis.
And today, we're going to talk about breaking rules. So, I don't like rules, or to be more precise, I don't like it when other people try to foist their rules on me. I can deal with it if I'm getting paid, of course, but thinking back, in every job I've ever had, I've pushed back on the rules at least a little bit, at least until I get a chance to see if the rules that are thrust onto me are worth following. And if I don't like the rules, I don't end up being a good fit for that position.
So let's start off with the definition of rule. The Oxford Dictionary has several definitions, one of which is a set of explicit or understood regulations or principles governing conduct within a particular activity or sphere. Our definition for this podcast will include established processes, policies, procedures, standards, conventions for social systems. Examples would include handshaking when you're introducing yourself to someone new, speaking clearly, saying please and thank you.
But our relationship isn't so much rules-based as it is based in fiat, which means a decree or an official order given by somebody in authority. But there's this sense of arbitrariness or creating a new rule without a lot of use of reasoning and evidence or without consulting the person that is going to be the target of that rule. So early in our relationship, I spent a fair amount of time creating lists of rules for Lance. And my thinking was that the rules could be used to forestall conflict and make my job as the dominant as easy as possible. But looking back, I can see that what I was doing was actually just making rules for me, because for every rule I made for him, I had to make a protocol for myself for how to consistently enforce that rule in real life. Just because you make a rule for someone doesn't mean that that person is automatically going to obey the rule. I really felt and still feel that the rule of law is the best way to go about governing any kind of group. But running a tight ship is not the reason we're together. We want a tight ship, but again, we need the flexibility that a rule book just couldn't offer us. We're together because one-on-one power exchange energizes us sexually and in other aspects of our lives. But there's also something else going on in our lifestyle that pertains to rules, and it has to do with my innate felt need to break them. It's not a compulsion, usually. It's more of a kind of hunger or desire that grows over time and yearns to be satisfied. And I mean, throughout 90% of my life so far, I've declined to meet that need. And usually that decision was the right choice. But looking back, I probably would have been okay and maybe even better off if I hadn't been so assiduous about not breaking certain types of rules. So about 10 years ago, I got a job teaching in a pull-out anti-expulsion program for middle schoolers who were dealing with some pretty serious behavior issues. For example, several of them were actually diagnosed with something called conduct disorder. And conduct disorder is a designation that is used to identify children and teenagers who would be diagnosed as having antisocial personality disorder if they were adults. But you can't legally diagnose a minor with a personality disorder, so practitioners of varying kinds, like lawyers and school psychologists and therapists and parole officers and probation officers, we'll all refer to antisocial personality disorder as conduct disorder. But the kids are basically psychopaths. Now, not all psychopaths are dangerous, but a few of these kids were definitely dangerous. For example, a couple of times, they decided to set each other on fire in the middle of class. Another student, a really sweet kid most of the time, tried to strangle another student right in front of me in the middle of class. Another time, I was sitting at my desk, and one of the quote-unquote worst of the worst, that's almost a term of art for teachers who specialize in dealing with these kinds of kids, he was sitting about 2 feet away from me, and to impress a girl he liked, he commenced to tell her in close detail all of the different ways that he wanted to rape and torture me. And that was bad. And he actually did get expelled for it. But part of why I was not particularly successful with that student population in general was because I saw a part of me in them. I've talked about some of my fantasies on this podcast.
So you're basically finding kindred spirits amongst these psychopathic kids.
I mean, in a manner of speaking, but I mean, when you're kindred spirits with the psychopath, nobody wins. You know what I'm saying?
Even though they're describing how they're going to rape and torture you.
So I've talked about some of my fantasies on this podcast, but even with Lance giving me pretty much carte blanche to do evil things to him, I would never do the things that that kid was talking about.
Not even if I asked for it?
Well, I've already done most of those things to you anyway. You don't really have to ask for it. But the thing that I had in common with those little assholes was the urge to transgress. On their worst...
Another technical term?
Sure. On their worst days, and that was most days, they spent their time actively seeking things to break, people to fight, and new rules to transgress. And just to be clear, what they were doing was way outside of the norm for adolescent behavior. They weren't just mouthing off. They were doing the things that they were mouthing off about. And also, they weren't going anywhere. There's not much you can do with the quote-unquote worst of the worst, which is actually how my very experienced mentor referred to those kids on the first day of school. He was an extremely patient man. His students who weren't psychopaths loved him, even though they were struggling. The whole school was for kids who were not going to be able to survive academically in normal high schools. So anyway, at this point, listeners, you may be noticing that I've been mostly avoiding talking about myself. So let me start by saying, never in my life have I ever non-consensually acted verbally or physically abusive. Have I been openly critical with people? Yes. Have I been overly critical with people? Also, yes. But that's nothing compared to what I often long to do and say. And I don't doubt that that is true of many, many people. Regardless, what makes me not a psychopath is that I have empathy for others and a sense of self-preservation. From what I've read, those are the two main traits that distinguish non-psychopaths from psychopaths. But on the other hand, all of these various labels seem to be in a perpetual state of flux. So now, antisocial personality disorder is considered to be a spectrum disorder. And lots of people, ka-ching, ka-ching, for the therapists, are on it. And now the psychology world reserves the use of the term psychopath only to label the worst of the worst sufferers of antisocial personality disorder. So I don't really think that I have antisocial personality disorder. I just like to tell people that I do when I'm bored or annoyed for some reason. And just so you know, if you're a guy listening to this podcast and you like entertaining yourself by thinking about evil women, go for it. I have no problem with that. But boy, do I really hate rules. And looking back, I think that's probably a big part of why I wasn't a good classroom teacher, even when I was teaching at a relatively prestigious public research institute. I hate teaching because I hate rules. And I was definitely not the right person to try to corral a bunch of real deal psychopaths. I'm not talking about my CU students. I'm talking about those kids. Okay. But beyond my particular fetish for rule breaking, and it is a sexual fetish, there are some objectively good reasons to break rules. For example, you often have to break an old rule in order to make something new. So an obvious example would be the civil disobedience strategies of the civil rights movements, like Gandhi's salt march. The British were going to start taxing salt that Indians were taking out of the ocean, and Gandhi, like, and they made a long march to the ocean, and that is what sparked off his major Indian independence movement that created an entire new democratic nation. But rule breaking is also important in a wide variety of cultural contexts. Art history is filled with rule breakers, as is music history. Every new era in music history came into being by people who broke the musicological rules of their own eras. Most of the art and literature, and even medicine that we enjoy today, is often the result of hundreds of years of continual rule breaking. So perhaps ironically, the kink world is overflowing with rules. When I first encountered the quote-unquote community, I was pretty shocked at the level of authoritarianism I was experiencing from numerous directions, and especially from other femdoms. Femdoms, maledoms, femsubs, kink educators. Not so much from male subs, though, thankfully. I think the term surplus repression, which we talked about in a previous episode, is somewhat apt here. Marcuse draws a distinction between basic and surplus repression, which is defined as that portion of repression which is in excess of the level necessary to sustain a specific civilization at any time. And those surplus rules are the ones that I find the hardest to resist breaking, because I feel morally obligated to break the rules that oppress people, right? That's definitely fair game. But in my book, so is oppressing people.
So oppressing people is rule breaking?
Yes. Owning slaves is oppressive. Slavery is a form of oppression. I was oppressing you by making you finish your notes for this episode when you were super tired.
True.
But our focus of today's episode is on breaking rules, not being socially coerced into following them. So here are some of our thoughts on situations that involve breaking rules that may or may not be okay. So first, we'll talk about safety-based rules and when you shouldn't and should break them. So for example, if you're a kinky, you shouldn't break rules when you don't have a lot of experience. You also shouldn't break kinky rules when you're experiencing heightened emotionality. Like when you're angry at someone, you don't want to take your flogger and beat the shit out of them. Even though Lance keeps saying that he wants me to do that, I'm not going to do it. You also should not break rules at public kinky venues, even if you're very secure in your ability to play safely. You have to follow those people's rules. There are serious legal implications if you don't. But here's when you can break rules. Like when you're at home and do know what you're doing, and when your partner trusts you.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me, because one of our earliest kink sessions was one of breath play. And there is this rule in the kink community where it's basic common sense and common knowledge that you shouldn't be doing breath play with someone that you don't know well and trust completely. But breaking this rule so early on in our relationship, I think, provided us with a really intense experience. I didn't trust you at that time, but that session really helped me build that trust in you. So it seems like we do our rule breaking on a case-by-case basis and try to feel, you know, if the time is right. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. There's an intuitive quality to when we should and shouldn't do it. And of course, our own intimacy as a couple is definitely a factor in what we feel comfortable doing. So now we're going to talk about socially based rules. So here are some examples of when you can't or shouldn't break them. Okay, number one, don't kink shame. What comes around goes around. If you're already involved in some kind of kink community, it means you are doing or you're trying to do some weird shit. So be tolerant of other people's weird shit. So many people new to kink seem to have a lot of trouble being able to distinguish between consensual and non-consensual forms of violence. Another social rule would be don't gossip. The kink world is rife with gossip about alleged consent violations. If you have reason to believe that the gossip is true, instead of spreading rumors, how about you encourage the victim to go to the police? If you're certain that what you're talking about is a serious violation, if you're not certain about it, for God's sake, don't gossip about it. But here are some times when you can or should break rules. One example would be when the rules are created by people with little or no life experience with BDSM. It blows my mind how many people who have contacted me have no interest in real life in-person BDSM. It does seem like online BDSM is now the norm. So anyway, an example of what I was talking about is when someone is shocked by the very idea of power imbalances in romantic relationships, or maybe they're just trying to virtue signal in some way. Whenever you see that happening on FetLife or in person, I advise you to start describing the most hardcore kinky scene you've ever seen or participated in or fantasized about.
How would that help for people to describe those intense scenes? Would it like scare them off?
Yeah, that's the idea. If you see someone kink shaming for basic kinky practices, those people need to go. They need their permission slip to be kinky revoked. Vanillas do not belong in kinky spaces. I feel like some kind of TERF saying that, but I admit that I'm a KERF. I'm a kink-exclusive radical femdom. And thus, I am now going to talk about the rules of femdom. So from what I've seen, while there is a baseline similarity between male dom and femdom dynamics, there are often significant differences that I've seen repeatedly. For example, I've seen both male subs and fem subs take pride and pleasure from doing domestic labor and service in general. They both like to be topped sexually by the dom, and they both get testy when they feel unappreciated.
This is true, for me at least.
And they both seem to have a strong need for structure and routine.
This is also true.
And to be clear, all of this is coming from my own limited experience, but I have also seen these patterns in other couples. So with my first sub, I created a 10-page slave contract that delineated everything I could do to him and the things that I would not do. And on the last page, I had a place for both of our signatures. So he was someone who had spent, as I recall, at least 15 years in the military. And so while I thought the contract was super edgy and demanding, he immediately cottoned right to it. I think he was relieved to see everything laid out so clearly and systematically. And I remember having him do like the slave positions a couple of times, which he actually loved doing.
I remember those. That seemed to me like a good way to impress other people, particularly at kink events. But is there any other use for them? Are they practical?
I mean, not that I know of or care about. And even if you did want to use them, it's not like the positions are hard to do. It's not like you have to spend hours and hours, quote unquote, training to do them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I ended up just dispensing with the whole contract, including the slave positions, after a few dates because it was just so geeky and felt so pointless. I knew what I wanted to do to him, and he was really just fine with me doing those things to him. So in general, I think external rules and structures, at least for me and my relationships, are really superfluous. So when Lance and I got together and decided to have a TPE relationship, I started to think about once again developing rules and systems of rules. And once again, I dispensed with them very quickly. And as I was working on this episode, I realized that what I really enjoy is making elaborate lists of rules. I really like structured pieces of writing and I like structuring writing. And there's nothing more structural than a list of rules. But I actually get very little pleasure or gratification out of enforcing them.
It seems like you're creating the rules so that you can break them right off the bat.
Could that be true? I never thought of that.
For me, I don't think rules are any fun. I mean, following them does not allow you to feel your dom's power because your compliance is self-imposed. And if you break them, that just feels bratty and childish. You know, it's a childish attempt at getting attention. So for me as a sub, it's a lose-lose situation.
And yet another reason for making and breaking or challenging rules is to challenge deep limitations in oneself that take the form of rules. So for example, in our relationship, Lance doesn't seem to worry so much about societal rules, not as much as I do, and I love him for it.
I think what we're doing by our total power exchange relationship is breaking a very well-established rule that says that relationships should be on an equal footing and should be an equal partnership.
I agree. I agree that our dismissal of equal partnerships is one of our biggest and most felicitous decisions that we've made. And one of the biggest benefits to me for this relationship is that Lance's submissiveness actually feels like permission to break my own toxically limiting self-generated rules.
Yeah, I don't think you need my permission, but I do try to point out limiting beliefs, which are a form of self-imposed rules. So by all means, break away.
Yeah, because historically, I've been very uptight and judgy about people. And that just means that I'm trying to pretend like I'm not judging myself. And there are reasons for that. But I'm gradually letting go of my judgments and expectations of other people.
Do you feel that your judgment of others is an indication that you want to dominate those people?
If that were true, that would be a great justification for judging people, because I really deep down want to dominate them. But I don't think that that's true. I think it's just that, you know, I can be a little insecure. But I also get judgy because over the last 10 years, say, I've really been focused on figuring out how to make my own world better. So maybe I'm trying not to be like people who I don't want to be like. But it's all very true that as soon as I accepted my authentic sexuality, I felt a lot better about myself. I still get irritated with people, but I'm gradually figuring out how to create a space where I don't have to deal with people who I just don't have the energy to worry about. So we're going to conclude with a discussion of the phrase, the art of the possible. The art of the possible is a phrase historically associated with politics, and it's come to mean, quote, achieving what we can rather than what we want. And I found that quote in a piece in the journal, The New Statesman. And the author pointed out that today it's used a little more optimistically as a challenge to aged ideas. Like basically, what was not possible in the past might be possible today. But for me and Lance, the art of the possible is about finding ways to transgress boundaries that keep us from being our authentic selves. What is possible for us as a femdom couple or throuple or quintuple? Right now, we're still constrained by very real and important barriers, but many of those barriers are going to drop away within the next few months. And of course, at that point, a whole new set of parameters will spring up around us, inviting ever more opportunities for us to fuck around and find out. So thank you very much for joining us today. In our next episode, we'll discuss our recent experiences at the recurring local femdom event that we talked about on a previous episode. It was a very different experience with a very different crowd. So until then, have a great week.